Hello and welcome backstage. My name is Alim Pandaru and I will try to take you behind the scenes of the music industry. We are at the DJ Superstore showroom in Bucharest, our host for today's podcast. Be sure to check their platform Badass DJ for more interviews and news about music and more. Usually my podcasts are in Romanian, but from time to time I will have some international guests, and this is the first episode in English. This is actually the first episode from the podcast that I'm recording ever, so be gentle if something doesn't sound right. Today with me is one of the best DJs in the world. He was voted the best DJ in the United States in 2012 and 2014 by DJ Times magazine, and he is constantly in the annual DJ Mag Top 100. He is the host of the Global DJ Broadcast Show and one of the pioneers of the EDM scene worldwide. He is so in love with Romania that he has decided to marry one of our beautiful girls. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce to you Mr. Marcus Schultz.
Hey, you know what? Next time we do the podcast, we'll do it in Romanian. I should know enough Romanian by then.
Yeah.
I'm learning Romanian every day a little bit more.
Well, it's good to have a Romanian wife.
Yes. Well, June 1st. So then it'll be official.
2019.
Yes. In Ibiza.
The wedding of the year.
Yeah. We're quite excited about it. It's going to happen in Ibiza. And I think it's going to be an amazing party. We're going to bring some traditional Romanian singers as well. Because, you know, we got to have some traditional Romanian.
Okay, that will play like musica populară.
Yeah, no. I want proper Romanian, you know, like
Manele, right?
Is that what it's called? No. Adina's over there shaking her head. I don't know what it means, but.
I'm glad that you accepted to do this podcast. I know you have a busy schedule, but this podcast is called Backstage, so I will try to take the people behind the scenes of Marcus Schultz. So let's start with your childhood, because you grew up in Germany, you moved to the United States. How was it like for you, German kid, to move to the...
Yeah, that was actually, moving to the United States was the hardest thing for me at such a young age. I moved to the US when I was 13. At such a young age, it was really hard because I didn't know the culture. It's a lot different culture, the European culture from the American culture. And I didn't really know the language very much. So those were the years where I put on my headphones and I would just listen to the radio. When I first moved to the USA, I lived with my aunt in New York. So I had the opportunity to hear some amazing radio shows. You know, New York City had, Mr. Magic and WBLS and all the hot mixers on 98.7 Kiss. And I mean, I can just go on. Sometimes I'll go on YouTube and kind of look for some of those old shows, but I would just sit there and I would listen, you know, headphones on and listen to the mixes. Tony Humphries, he was huge as well. And, when you don't know the language, when you're, you know, and the culture, it was a little bit depressing time for me. So music was something that kind of got me through all of those, all of those times. And I think that's where I've always had love for music. My father was a musician, but I think that's where my passion, like the understanding for the emotions within music and how music can change you emotionally and uplift you. I think that's when that really kind of formed.
When did you decide to start mixing and doing your own your own music?
Okay, well, actually, this is funny, but I used to be a break dancer, and I used to make the mixtapes for all of our breakdance battles, and you know, with the pause button on the tape deck and everything, and I got to be quite good at it. And then we, as a breakdance crew, we decided we wanted to we were going to host our own party, our own breakdance contest. And a friend of mine had turntables in his basement, and we would all go there and hang out and practice. And the idea at this party was we were all going to take turns DJing for a little bit. The night, and we would promoted this thing for like 2-3 months. And then the night of the show, everybody else got cold feet because the place was packed. It was so many people. We didn't expect that many people. We expected maybe 20, 50 maximum. I think it was like 200-300 people. And it was like, oh my gosh. So I said, listen, I'll start. And when you guys get comfortable, you guys jump in. And they all took off. And I wound up spinning the rest of the night. But I remember the feeling. I remember it so clearly. I remember when I was, you know, mixing, I was like, this just feels right. Something about this, it feels like this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
What kind of music were you mixing?
I was always, okay, so it was breakdance music. It was hip hop, but it was, I was always looking for melodies. So I was more into Kraftwerk, Man Parrish, Yellow Magic Orchestra, if you can believe that. I mean, anything that was more melodic and synth based, that's what I was into. Mantronic. Oh my God, Mantronic was like a huge inspiration back in those days.
You released your first huge hit when you were like 23. You Won't See Me Cry.
No, actually, I was even younger than then, because You Won't See Me Cry, we did that probably when I was 17, something like that, and then released it again when I was a few years later after that. So yeah, that was a pretty cool time, because I remember we pressed it on vinyl, and I went to Amsterdam Dance Event, and I was passing around the vinyl, and I remember I went to Escape, and I remember I went in at the very beginning of the night, and I handed the vinyl up to the DJ. It was this young blonde kid up in the DJ booth, and he waved at me and thanked me, and then I went home. A few months later, I got a message that this guy wanted to use it for his mix compilation, and I was like, wow. And the DJ was Armin Van Buuren, and it was his first compilation, Boundaries of Imagination. So I think that was 1999, so I've known Armin since 1999, and that's kind of how that relationship started, and the whole kind of my Dutch connection started.
Going back to your childhood, did the other kids thought that you were this weird kid that plays music? And
they did, especially because I come where I was living in the USA. It was a very blue collar city. I mean, it was, everybody was listening to, you know, Ozzy Osbourne and Van Halen and like really like rock and roll. And here I was like dressing like Michael Jackson and, you know, moonwalking and everything. So yeah, they thought I was weird. But when I used to make these pause button mixtapes, I did it with like Queen, Another One Bites the Dust, or make pause button mixes, mashups of like some of the Van Halen stuff. And I would try it with different stuff, and I would play it for my friends, and then they understood. They're like, oh my gosh, how'd you do that? Even my friends that were the rock and roll people, you know, they were like, well, this is pretty cool. It's kind of strange, but it's pretty cool. So they all knew that I was a little different. I was more of creative soul.
What was the moment when you first heard your song on the radio?
Actually, the first time, I don't know about one of my songs, but I remember the first time I did a mix and it was played on the radio. I remember it was called the 956 Hot Mix, and at 9:56 p.m. they would play like a 30-minute mix from a resident local DJ somewhere, and it was on a big radio station. And I remember I was a resident DJ in this club, so I was playing and I stopped the music, and then we tuned in the club sound system to the radio station, and then it came on. So that was the first time I was on radio. We were kind of celebrating there at the club.
You did a lot of residencies while you were a teenager?
Yeah, I think that's where, you know, I say this a lot, but it's like what's missing right now is the art of DJing. And I think that happens because people become producers, they make a hit record, and then they're just thrown right onto the main stage. Like, oh, you have a big international hit, get up there and now DJ. And that's not how I started. I started off as a resident DJ, and I learned my craft, you know? I learned how to direct a night. That's why when I do these long open and close sets, I understand how the night goes. I understand the philosophies of playing all night long. And I contribute that to being a resident DJ all these years. You know, you'd roll up with your Crater Records at the beginning of the night, and you played until the last person leaves. You know, there was nothing crazy or monumental about it. That was your job, you know? And it's funny because as you get more famous, your sets get shorter.
Except if you're Armin van Buuren at Untold.
Yeah, he did a nice long set. And a couple years ago, I did a 13-hour set at Tomorrowland. So that was probably, that was the
they
longest
let you
set
play
I've
played.
I had my own stage and played open and close. I played from 12 o'clock in the afternoon until 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was hot.
Wow.
So yeah, it was pretty, that was pretty intense.
This year you were the first time at Untold Festival. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this festival?
I think it's fantastic. Grew up really fast, right?
Yeah.
No, Untold is amazing. First of all, the city of Cluj is amazing. And the way they help out, the way they're the ambassadors for the club. You know, I love Tomorrowland, but the city of Cluj and the city of Boom, like, they don't compare. The city of Boom is in is the Belgium city that whole where Tomorrowland is at. But it just feels like the entire city of Cluj is invested in this, is part of this. You know, all the city center, even, you know, and when you have an entire city, an entire region supporting something, you know, and hosting, being gracious hosts to people from all over the world that are coming, it really makes for a special atmosphere. And I think that's why it grew so fast, just because of the support from the Romanian public, the Romanian people, the city of Cluj. That, of course, you know, the festival is great as well. You know, I mean, I love the festival. So many things to do. But I honestly feel that the love that the city of Cluj showed to the people from all over the world is one of the main reasons why Untold has gotten to be as big as it is.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's one of my favorite festivals in the whole world, because at every point there's something awesome to do.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, the main stage is really amazing. You have the other two stages near the Polyvalent Hall, and you also have the trance stage. Today, this year we have the trance stage and the other small stages that are always full.
Mm-hmm.
For me, as a festival goer, Untold is always overwhelming, because I don't know where to go first, what to do first, even though there are artists that I've seen many times, but the atmosphere and the feeling to be there is amazing. Do you want to play on the main stage or at Untold?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the goal, you know. But I think that the beautiful thing about trying to build the trance stage right now is that, you know, trance used to be king here in Romania back in the day. You know, when I used to come to Romania here at the beginning, you know, it was amazing. You do a trance show and the entire city was there. You know, trance has lost a little bit of the luster here in Romania. But not around the world. In the USA, for example, trance is absolutely huge. Obviously, you know, Transmission, which is in Prague, it was sold out, completely sold out this year. I mean, there was people outside trying to get in, and that's at the O2 Arena. So there's pockets, you know, trance is huge in a lot of places, but Romania really lost the trance, you know, trance lost some footing here in Romania. So for me, I'm very proud to be part of the part of the contingency to kind of reestablish trance here in Romania. And, you know, we need a great lineup on the trance stage to do that. You know, everybody hears Armin on the main stage and they hear, you know, they hear me, you know, as well. But to be able to have a trance stage with really good artists and be part of that is very proud for me. Because like I said, I think we need to rebuild the trance scene here in Romania. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm doing club shows here in Bucharest as often as I can, because that's the whole plan. Is like, you know, we gotta start it back at the beginning, back in the clubs, and get everybody excited about this wonderful music called trance again.
Yeah, nowadays I think the young generation are more into D&B, drum and bass.
Yeah, and a hard style as well. It's like huge, you know. But yeah, it's crazy. It is a brand new generation, and they bring their own, you know, this is their moment, you know. It's funny, people always, the trance purists always talk about 2001. That was when trance was like, you know, well, 2018 is this generation's 2001. You know what I mean? It's this is their moment. And, you know, and all we can do is just, you know, try and show them, different style and hope that they love it as much as we do.
Tell me more about the Global DJ broadcast. How did that idea started? And
well, you remember at the beginning of the podcast, I was telling you I used to listen to the radio when I first moved to the USA. I always knew that one day I wanted to kind of do what it was that other people were doing for me. You know, I wanted to be able to guide somebody or be the soundtrack for somebody who needed the music. Radio has always been my passion. So when I had the opportunity to do a radio show, I thought of the kid in the me as a 13-year-old first moving to the USA, listening to music on my headphones. That's the way I kind of approach my radio show, Global DJ Broadcast, playing music not for millions and millions of people that are listening, but playing for one person wearing headphones. You know, that's kind of my strategy, my programming philosophy. And it's all because I just want to give back the same way that, you know, I was touched when I first moved to the USA.
How did that change you?
Well,
I mean, you improved your skills.
Yeah. You know, I think you start becoming comfortable with who you are and what you do. You know, you'd start, confidence. I think that's the main thing. I'm very confident in front of the camera now, and very confident in front of a microphone. It's very natural because I've been doing it all these years. So I think that's the thing. As an artist, we're always very shy. You know, but as you spend more and more time in front of the public, microphone and cameras, you become more comfortable.
What do you think are the ingredients that a young person or young guy that is passionate about music and want to go DJing?
Drive. I mean, you're gonna get told no, you know, 100 times, but you can't let that stop you. And you know, you're gonna have moments where you're playing and the crowd is not into it. You know, and this is gonna have moments where a girl is drunk and gonna come up to the DJ booth and try and order a drink. You know, it's like you've seen it all. You know, but you've got to just keep going. You got to keep hoping, knowing that there's a bigger path for you. So drive is the most important thing. There's lots of very talented guys out there, and sometimes what's missing is the drive. And it's a shame when you have somebody who's so talented but just wants to just, you know, play FIFA all day.
Yeah, you have to work.
Yes, exactly.
That's the secret for everything. I actually work, and don't give up when things don't go as you expected.
No, just grow thicker skin and just keep on going.
Your last album, We Are the Light, features two special collaborations with Smiley and Alina Eremia. How was it for you to work with them?
Well, you know, I've been coming to Romania a lot over the last 5 years. And whenever I come here, and also I do have to say Soundland is also Romanian. And Adina. So actually I have 4 Romanians on this album. I've been coming to Romania a lot. And whenever I come to Romania, Adina always, calls up some studios and says, hey, you know, Marcus is here. Can he work in one of your studios? And so I grew a great relationship over at Ha 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 with Smiley's team. We did some songwriting over there in the past, and we got to be good friends. And I remember Adina and I, we were in Los Angeles and we were writing The Dreamers, and we had a demo singer, a good friend of ours there. And I was listening to it. I'm like, okay, Adina, who would be good to sing this? And she said, you know, this may be crazy, but I can hear Smiley singing this. So we presented this song to Smiley and he fell in love with it. He said, you know, it's been a long time since I felt this way about a song. So we made arrangements next time I was in Bucharest here to go into the studio and cut the vocals. And, you know, Smiley went into the voice room and we hit record. And the first moment that he started singing, you knew it felt right. It was like, oh my God, like he nailed it. It was absolutely perfect. It was exactly what we were envisioning. And I'm super happy that people get to hear, you know, I mean, everybody knows Smiley's voice, but to be able to hear it in that kind of a setting. I played it at Transmission last week in Prague in front of 20,000 people at the O2 Arena. And it was such a magical moment. So, I'm super proud of that. And then, of course, Adina and Alina got to be really good friends through. Alina did a song on our label with another artist, Nova Space.
Yeah, I know.
And she came to Miami to film the video. And we were just hanging out, me and Adina and Alina and her boyfriend, and we just got to be good friends. And while we were doing that, we were like, you know, one of these days when the stars align, we got to do a song together. So when I was working on this album, you know, I said it would be great to do a song with Alina. So what I did is I wanted to do something like real trance with her. So I contacted a friend of mine, Raz Nitzen, who he writes like he's a legendary writer in the trance scene. He's written some songs for Armin. He's written some songs, Susanna, Ana Criado, like some amazing trance artists he's written for. And I said to Raz, I said, listen, I got this girl. She's a pop artist, beautiful voice, beautiful girl. But I want to do something like traditional trance, like something really emotional. And he's like, okay, give me a couple of days to kind of wrap my head around this. And then we started going back and forth forth with ideas and presented to Alina, and she loved it as well right from the beginning. And we did it in one afternoon at the Epic Record Studio, and man, she did an amazing job. I'm so proud of Alina for this song. I mean, she really, I think, you know, the comments that I get on my socials from this song, people are absolutely in love with this song. So both Alina and Smiley, it's amazing. You know, one of the things that I always say, people ask me, like, who would you love to work with, you know, like a pop artist? And I said, well, I wouldn't mind working with any pop artist, but my idea would be to bring them into my world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not me go into the pop world, but bring them into my world. And both Smiley and Alina came into the trance world and just did, they make me proud for sure.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the tracks, and it was a bit weird to hear their voices on a trance track, but they sound really amazing, and thank you for doing this. I wish that more pop artists would go into EDM and give them vocals for this kind of tracks.
The thing is, it's hard for a Romanian artist to break out of Romania. You know, I mean, we listened to the radio because I couldn't get my phone connected to the car system. So we were listening to the radio when we were driving this week from Timișoara here to Bucharest. And you hear some amazing singers, Romanian artists. But for some reason or another, they never break out of Romania. It's very hard, first of all, for anybody to break internationally. But, I know it's the dream of many artists. And, as I spend more time here in Romania, hopefully I'll be able to make that dream come true for some other Romanian artists.
What do you look for a vocalist when you feature them on a track?
Well, I think of a voice like a color, almost like a keyboard. When you pull up a sound, a square wave, a saw wave, a sine wave, it's a certain color. I think of sounds as colors. So it's just a matter of having the right color with, that fits what it is that you're trying to do. There's no like, oh, this is exactly what I'm looking for. No, it's just like today I'm painting a landscape photo or a landscape picture, and I need a beautiful blue sky. That's whose voice sounds like a beautiful blue sky. You know, that's the way that I kind of approach. And when I hear voices, I always think about, I study the voices, I study the range, and try to figure out where their range is, what their tone is like.
Hello again, and welcome to the halftime break. No worries, no commercials here yet. We're not at the Super Bowl. It's just an opportunity to give you some context about this episode. It was originally recorded in November 2018, just before Marcus Schulz's show in Crystal Club Bucharest. And in the meantime, he was also named America's Best DJ in 2018, and he got the Golden Mixer Award from DJ Times Magazine. He will be playing again in Bucharest this weekend, so if you're listening this in time, you should go and see him. Usually, I will use this break to bring you some updates regarding the podcast, and today I'm pleased to announce you that there will be more episodes in English in the near future. I will alternate them with the Romanian ones, so in a couple of weeks I'll present to you a great couple of DJs. I will also use this break as a sponsor's moment, but since we don't have a sponsor yet, I will just promote the charity cause, and I will ask you to make a donation for little Robert Gabrazei. He was diagnosed with spinal muscular atrophy type 1 at the age of 1 month, and his only chance of surviving is a treatment in the United States that unfortunately costs $2 million. I find it so unfair that people's lives depend on money, and this is a huge amount of money. But maybe with the help of us, we can help Robert. You can find all the details on gofundme.com/lifeforrobert. In the second part of the podcast with Marcus Schulz, we will talk about his beginning with the trance music, depression, his connections to Romania, how the collective fire in Bucharest affected him, and about his creative process in studio and on stage. Let's go now back to the backstage. Okay, let's go back to your beginnings at DJing. What made you go into trance music?
No, I always loved melodies. You know, I loved melodies. Two things that I loved: melodies and really good grooves. And then when I started DJing, when I started DJing in the clubs, I was playing in commercial clubs and I really didn't like it so much. And a friend of mine said, listen, if you're really serious about this, the only place that you need to go is into the gay clubs. Because that is where, like, the best music is played. That's where the best DJs are playing. That's where the most knowledgeable public is. So in those days, that was where I had to be. And in the gay clubs, you needed to have a groove and you needed to have some drama, some you know, melodies there. And I love the music there. You know, I used to play like this Italian disco stuff, and I'd play like, you know, a lot of it was trance, you know, but it was a little bit slower. And I've always been there. I've just kind of evolved as the trance genre evolved. Then from the gay clubs, I went into the rave scene and I started playing at raves, and the German techno, German trance sound was huge. You know, I became a big fan of like Jam and Spoon, Nailin and Kane, you know, artists like that, that were doing that. They had amazing grooves and amazing melodies. So for me, I didn't say, oh, I want to do trance. For me, I was just finding the music that I connected to, and it happened to be trance.
But you also have another project called Dakota.
That's the darker, deeper sound. Yeah, you know, at the turn of the millennium, I started, you know, Sasha Digweed, Global Underground, Deep Dish, and their Yoshitoshi label. They were huge inspiration to me. And I was living in London at the time, so I started making the sound that I was hearing when I would go out to hear, you know, John Digweed at Bedrock. At his Bedrock nights in London, the sound just kind of caught on. He picked up some of the tracks for their Northern Exposure CD, as well as Yoshitoshi, Global Underground. And then also Hooch Tunes picked up some of my music as well. So that's kind of the Dakota sound was born, you know, Cold Harbor, the Cold Harbor sound. And I don't know, as I, you know, got popular through the darker sound, I've always been like more on the, you know, when I was first coming up, people were saying I'm the Pink Floyd of trance, you know? And one thing that I learned is when you go out on the main stage and you're playing this deeper, darker sound, it's difficult because people are like, come on, come on, you know? And you're like, you're playing arpeggios and floaty stuff. So my music had to evolve to kind of be able to connect with the people, because I was playing a lot of the, you know, I was playing main stages all over the world. So I started evolving out of the Dakota sound. So we still try and bring the Dakota sound back when the vibe is right, when it's inside of me, when it feels right.
Yeah, what's the difference between Marcus Schultz and Dakota?
Good question. I always say that the Dakota sound or the Dakota stuff is how I feel inside. It's me looking inside and making music from what's inside of me. The Marcus Schultz sound is me making music and writing music about us as a community. So I'll look out on the main stage at Tomorrowland, look out at the people, and I'll be inspired, like I did, you know, when I wrote Upon My Shoulders. The track with Sabu. It was from a moment when I was on the stage looking out at the audience and said, I want to write about this moment when I'm in the studio. So that's kind of the Marcus Schultz stamp right there, is writing about us. And Dakota is writing about me. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, yeah, you know, the Dakota thing is a lot more personal and a lot darker. Because inside of me, you know, it's like, you know, I have, you know, still all that in me from when I was growing up. I had a lot of dark times growing up. So the Dakota sound is always a little bit more dark. But it's hard to be dark and depressed when you're standing in front of 20,000 people screaming your name. And, you know, it's like you just look out and you just shake your head going, wow, how did I get here? You know?
Yeah, about that. You did a great trance mix of Linkin Park in the end. That's it's regarding Chester and Avicii. What would you say to the people about the stress that DJs and artists, popular artists, have when they reach some level of fame?
Microphone just fell here. That's the hardest part about this industry is, the summer months especially, I would do sometimes 3 shows in 24 hours. You know, you do a daytime festival, you fly somewhere, you do a nighttime show, and then the next day you're at it again, doing another day festival. It's really, really heavy. But the important thing is you have to take those moments when you can to rest. Rest not just your body, but your mind. I tell you, sleep deprivation does some crazy stuff to your mind. You have to protect yourself from burnout. Now, because of what happened with Avicii and, you know, Chester, the industry is more aware and we're talking about it now. And that's very important, because before, nobody talked about it. You'd hear stories about people just like passing. I've heard stories, you know, about some of my colleagues that had to be carried onto the airplane because they were just like, they couldn't move anymore. This has happened. You know what I mean? This has happened where parents have ran to management saying, what are you doing? You're killing my son. This stuff has happened. It's never been publicly talked about, but this has happened. I know for a fact. So now, since this has happened with Avicii, people are starting to talk about it and people are starting to open up about it. And that's, I think, a very good thing. What I say about Avicii is I feel that I wish that he would have been able to just sit down and talk with people, not his crew, just maybe other DJs, and just sit down and talk and realize he's not alone.
Yeah,
all these feelings that he was having, all these feelings of not feeling like you belong, you know what I mean? He not feeling like the stage is the right place for you, the studio is the best place for you, all those feelings he had, guess what? We all have them. It's and if he would have been able to talk about them and maybe realized he wasn't alone, I don't know. You know, that's the question mark that I always have. I know that I did a tour in Australia, I think maybe 3 years ago or so. And I know Eric Prydz very well. You know, he has problem anxiety, high anxiety when it comes to flying and everything. And, you know, I used to have really bad anxiety as well. And we just sat around one night at the bar. I think we were like chatting for 4 hours. You know what I mean? Yeah. But afterwards, you just felt like you felt better.
Because you realize that everybody goes through the same process and have
you're
the
not
same
alone.
Issues and struggles.
You know, when you don't feel alone, there's some strength there that you can draw from. So, like I said, the fact that as an industry we're talking about this now, I think is a very good thing.
How do you keep your engine running? Because well, you also fly from there to there.
You know, when I realized many years ago that this is my purpose on Earth. When you realize your purpose, then it just makes it much easier. I mean, I left my friends behind, I left family behind, but when your friends and your family support you and they're proud of you and they push you, say, yes, we'll be here for you when you come home, it's empowering. So I think, you know, once I realized this is my life mission, I jumped in and just never stopped swimming.
Yeah, so this motivates you to do this again and again.
Yeah, you know, and the beautiful thing is every morning you wake up and it's like, okay, what are we doing today? You know, today we're doing we're doing a podcast, and then we got a show tonight. What are we doing today? Oh, today we're going into the studio. We're doing this. We're doing it. It's beautiful because every day you wake up and you're like, wow, what are we doing today? It's not like, oh, what are we doing today? You wake up every morning going, wow, what are we doing today?
Wow, this is a really nice way to think about every day.
I consider myself very lucky because I know there are some immensely talented people out there that haven't been this lucky. And so I'm very thankful, you know, and I just consider myself one of the lucky ones.
3 years ago, I was in the Collective Club, and I realized after that tragic night that our life is really short and anything can happen at any time. Mm. So that's why I try to enjoy life every day and have no regrets. Do you have any regrets?
Well, I mean, that's a big question. I mean, you know, if I look back at my career, at my life, would I do things differently? No. But do I have regrets? Yeah, there's some great friends that I've left behind along the way. You know, it's funny. I reconnected with one of the guys who was in my breakdance crew way back, way, way back. And we reconnected and visited with each other, and his life took on a completely different path. And he loves music. He goes into his room. He has a room in his house and it has his DJ equipment. And when he's depressed or when he's down or, you know, he goes into there and his family knows, like, when I'm in this room, don't bother me. And he just goes in there and plays music and he'll stream it online and I'll go check it out. And you know, he's got like some friends that are watching it. And you realize that, you know, through your journey, you leave people behind, you know, that you wish you could take along with you. That's always, I guess it's like that with anything in life, you know, but there's some good people that have been left behind. And as I've been running, I consider myself kind of running and at a really fast pace, and you know, you have to keep up with me or I can't slow down, you know? So I think about all those people that I kind of left behind as I've been running through the industry. And talking about the collective club thing, that was heavy for me as well. That was a big thing because of, you know, my connection here in Romania. When that happened, you know, I've told, when I go into a club now and I do a sound check, you know, and I look around now, you know, I look around, yeah, make sure.
We all do that now.
And then I even tell the people, you know, I tell the managers or the owners of the club, you know, like, hey, listen, this is what happened at Collective Club. Please make sure, you know, that you take care of this, this, and this. And I also, when that happened, I put in my rider, no pyrotechnics in any club indoors. You know, obviously outdoor festivals, we have pyro, and you know, and arenas, we have pyro. But when you're in a club, it's just, I remember we used to have pyro and all kinds of crazy stuff at Ministry of Sound in London. Oh my gosh, you know. And I just when Club Collective happened, I remembered some of the close calls that we had at Ministry of Sound. Like we had these flares set up in the DJ booth that shot over the crowd. And I remember one time, gosh, I remember this. I remember the drop was coming, the buildup was coming, you know, strobes were going, and it was like, I knew that on the drop, they were going to shoot the flares. And all of a sudden, this fan jumps up and pulls himself up into the DJ, like, to like shake my hand, like, oh my God, Marcus. And he's got his hand up and he's pulling himself up. And that flare, that where the flare is coming out, is right next to his face. And I just like pushed him. You know what I mean? There's nothing I could do. I yelled, get down. And I pushed him. And then comes the drop. And then all of a sudden, boosh, you know? And you just think about all these close calls that there's just no reason to have pyro in clubs. And after the Club Collective thing happened, I made a lot of changes in my technical rider and also just the way that I approach things. It was a terrible tragedy, terrible, terrible tragedy.
Yeah, and it's a good thing that some people really learn from this, because there were a lot of other tragedies, like the station in the US. There was also in Brazil, also a club that it was like the same thing happening all over again. So I wish that people would learn from these accidents and try to be more careful in the future. You were one of the fewest artists, international artists, that put up a message for the people in Romania after that tragedy. So thank you for that.
Yeah, well, you know, Romania is very close to my heart. You know, this is home for me now. So anything that happens here in Romania, anything that's going on, I feel a connection to.
Well, tell me now about your connection to Romania. when was the first time you came here and how you met Adina?
Well, I came to Romania a long time ago for, you know, shows. And like I said, they were amazing shows here. But I met Adina online. And where is she? She's hiding here. I met Adina online. You know, we were like, she sent me some of her songs. And I was like, I heard her voice. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. You know, I really love the vibe. And so we started working together. Like, you know, I told her, I said, I'm going to be working on an album later in the year. I'll send you some music. I sent her a song and she sent it back. And I was like, wow, this is really, really good. And I have my studio in Miami. So I was like, okay, listen, come to Miami and, you know, let's record this. So she came to Miami and we were very professional. Like the first couple of times she came to Miami, we were like proper working, very professional, but you could feel there was this chemistry, you know? And I just remember, I remember the one time I took her to the airport and we were walking and I don't know why, I just grabbed her hand. That was the first time. And she just looked at me and smiled and we, wow, you know, it was like, I think she asked, what are you doing? You know, but so it was, we definitely felt a connection right at the beginning, but we were very professional about it. And as the years have gone by, connection has gotten stronger. You know, she's really helped me kind of embrace writing. You know, I used to do a lot of creative writing when I was a kid. But when I started DJing, I started playing with knobs, you know, I started making melodies and stuff. I stopped writing words. And one of the first songs she inspired me to get, you know, to write was Destiny, which was a huge song. And it's about us. So yeah, she's definitely been great in kind of giving me that confidence. And I proposed to her this past New Year's Eve. She was on stage at Avalon. She was singing. And I told her, I said, you're going to sing 4 songs. But I knew that after the third song, I was going to crash her set and then propose. So she's up there singing and then the song comes and I was nervous. That was probably one of the most nervous moments I've had on stage. Boom, the music stops. She's looking at me like, what's going on? I said, just keep talking to the audience. We'll fix it. And I came out on, came around the booth and up to the front of the stage and proposed to her in front of everybody. So it was amazing because her parents were there. My parents were there. It was a really magical moment. So we're going to get married June 1st this year in Ibiza. And the other nice thing is we're building a house here in Romania.
Wow.
I'm really excited about laying down roots here in Romania.
That's an interesting story because I was thinking that you will move to the US.
No, I love Romania. I love it here. No, we've got a place in Miami and a place in Berlin, but we'll move from Berlin. We'll make Romania the second headquarters.
You go to a lot of festivals. We go to a lot of events. Can you tell me one festival that really blew your mind?
I think EDC was the first one that really blew my mind because they were the first in the United States to just kind of like, okay, so EDC used to be in Los Angeles and then they moved to Las Vegas. And when they moved to Las Vegas, I was like, oh, this is, I don't know if this is going to work because to go to in Las Vegas, everything is 21 and over. Like to get a hotel room, you got to be 21. To go into the casinos, you got to be 21. It's like, how are we going to do this? Bringing all these people, all these young people here to Las Vegas and they can't do anything. EDC was the first one to show me how passionate and how driven this generation of EDM fans are. They came out to Las Vegas and it just blew my mind. Like it grew and it got bigger and bigger. So that was the first one for me. I mean, obviously Untold and Tomorrowland and Transmission and gosh, Nature One in Germany is amazing for its location. And there's lots of great festivals, but that was the first one where I just underestimated the EDM fans.
Do you think it's possible for DJ, you know, the DJ that masters the art of DJing to headline shows without having a song, without being a producer?
Not
as
anymore.
Well?
Not anymore. It used to be, but not anymore. Because now you need to sell tickets. That's the most important thing is getting people into the clubs and, you know, having a song on the radio or having songs that are known is very important. It's your calling card. It's hard to, I guess locally you could. There's some great local DJs who have great followings and, you know, as a headliner, you always look for them to add on to your show. Like, hey, let's get this guy to open because he has a great following. But internationally, it's absolutely impossible now just because your responsibility is also to sell tickets.
That's a bit sad.
Yeah.
Because...
But you know what? At the same time, nowadays, there's so many DJs. So how do you separate yourself from everybody else? by having a song that everybody plays, you know, it's
or by having a great show that people will
I mean you absolutely need that, but if you have a song that everybody knows and you're actively producing and you have a great show, now your the ability for you to be booked, you know what I mean, is very important. For example, when we do these shows, right, and let's say we have a club, a venue that holds 5,000 people, and you go into that city and you say, all right, I know that I can sell 3,000 tickets. Okay, we need to sell 2,000 more tickets. Who are we going to get? You know, we need to add on to sell 2,000 more tickets. Well, I would love to put on a guy who has a great show, is a great DJ, but at the end of the day, we need to be able to put 2,000 more tickets in. I mean, that's the economics of what's going on right now. It's either that or you play in the small clubs, but there's nothing like playing these big venues and putting on an amazing show to lots of people. I mean, isn't that what we all want? We all want to be in a club or a venue or a stadium or a stage and looking out at 10,000 people and just rocking it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the idea is, how do we get there? And in this day and age, you need to have some presence in the production world.
What is your creative process?
I always make music for my sets. That's the biggest thing. If I can't play it in my sets, I don't know, then it doesn't make sense for me. You know, obviously it's not saying I only make music for my sets. I make a lot. I have a hard drive full of stuff that I'm just experimenting with, whatever. But for the most part, what I release, what I spend my time on, is making sure that I can play it in my sets. Because if I can't play it in my sets, then nobody else can play it in their sets.
Fair enough. What do you think an opening DJ should be like?
Well, that's where the art of DJing comes in. You know, I know when I do my open to close sets, I approach it like three DJs. You know, people say, how do you do these 12-hour sets? Well, it's very simple. You program it like an opening DJ, then you program your peak hour set, and then you program the after hours set. And so you're three DJs in one. And the opening DJ, it's very important that, first of all, every year I make a song called Doors Open. It's like a 20-minute song that I make, and it's my first song that I play on all my open to close sets. It's 20 minutes long. So like the first 2-3 minutes is just like atmosphere swelling up. And then comes a little bit of bass, and then maybe 5 minutes later, a kick drum finally comes in. And then maybe 5 minutes after that, some percussion starts coming in. Because the weirdest thing that I've ever seen is like an opening DJ, and doors are open, and his first song is Animals. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, people haven't even gone to the bar to get there. People haven't even checked their coats yet. And you're already like peak hour, like blowing up the eardrums. So my philosophy is always like, let people come in to an atmosphere. You know, it's like the opening of a Broadway play. The curtains are open, you know, or when even before the curtains open, you walk in, there's an atmosphere, the lighting is just right, you know, and that's the approach that I take when I do these open and close sets. So I think it's very important for an opening DJ to establish an ambience in the room and then build it from there. Patience is the biggest thing. Okay, you got this song. Do you have to play it now? Can you wait one or two more songs before you play it? Just patience. Always try and see how long you can prolong playing that big song. And then before the big DJ comes on, the headlining DJ, I always ask that the 15 minutes before I go on, no vocals, be percussive, no chord changes, no white noise sweeps. Just try and keep a groove. So when I come on, it's like, it's a moment, you know, it gives people that 15 minutes to go to the bar, get a drink, and find their spot for the show. I remember when I was a resident DJ, very important thing was taught to me. And that's, you know, I know that as an artist, you don't want to hear this, but hey, you know, this is part of it. We're in show business. Part of it is selling drinks. The more drinks the bar sells, the better the night is. I mean, I get judged when I do my Las Vegas residencies, for example. They judge you based on how many drinks you move. You know, you want to be rebooked for a show in Las Vegas, you need to like make sure that you're moving bottles, you know. And how do you do that? By, you know, having moments in your sets where you're like giving people the opportunity. You don't have to bore them or stop the music, but there's just a whole flow to the night. And I think it's the opening DJ's responsibility to make sure that he has that.
And what about the closing DJ?
Oh, the closing, it's all on. The more weird you get, the better. You know, it's like then everything's been done, and it's just an opportunity to just kind of like let everybody have a good time, like towards the end of the night. I always say the more techie and more weird it is after, the better, you know, because that's the people who are just out and just want to see the show, they're going to leave no matter what. But the people that are left are the hardcore ones. They're like, yeah, let's get it on, you know? And so there's no reason to play the same stuff that I was playing in my peak hour set. And there's no reason to do everything that's already been done. Just keep people there and having a good time.
What are your expectations when you go on stage? What do you expect the audience to be?
I expect to crush it every time, but there's times sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, I'm reading this crowd all wrong. And it's very difficult because when you only have a very short set, if you don't come out right out of the box with connect with the audience, it's very tough. But I always, my first goal is always connect with the audience and then just take them for a ride.
Well, thank you for this ride.
Thank you for having me.
It was amazing. I was a bit clumsy at first, but I will.
We can look back at this episode, exactly. 10 years from now and say, wow, listen to how I started.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. And thank you for taking us backstage. We will have to end this podcast with a catchphrase that I have. I used it on every vlog that I do. It is aceste zint fise, which means that being said. So I will ask you to say that for...
Right. That being said.
So it's acestea zind fise.
Acestea fiind zise.
Zind fise. Acestea
zind fise.
Yeah. One, okay. Two, three, go.
Oh my gosh. One more time.
Acestea zind fise.
Acestea zind fise.
Ne vedem data viitoare.
Gata.
Thank you for listening this far. I really hope you enjoyed this talk. I surely did, and Marcus was the perfect guest for my first podcast in English, and I'd like to thank him again for supporting me and accepting to do this podcast even though we haven't met before. I'm really new to podcasting, but I understood that it's very important to have reviews on Apple Podcasts. So whether you listen to this episode on your phone, on Spotify, on YouTube, or on my website backstage.fm, I would really appreciate if you could give me a rating on Apple Podcasts when you have the time. For feedback and complaints, you can text me anytime on Instagram at pandutsu, or you can leave a comment on the episode on backstage.fm. See you in a couple of weeks with another episode in English. We'll be right back.